How do you balance learning with performance? It can be tricky because in a professional setting, the emphasis is almost always on performance, but in order to grow, we need to also be learning. Here with some advice is Eduardo Briceño, author of the new book, The Performance Paradox, Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. Eduardo is a speaker, facilitator, and program provider who supports organizations in developing cultures of learning and high performance. He's the co-founder and CEO of Mindset Works, a member of the Aspen Institute's Global Leadership Network, and an inductee in the Happiness Hall of Fame. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, this is Eduardo Briceño, author of The Performance Paradox, Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. This is a book about how we can live and work in ways that allow us to make greater progress toward our goals, whatever they might be. Not by working harder, but by shifting the ways we do things and the strategies we use. It turns out that most of us are working hard, but we're not directing that effort as effectively as we could be, so we end up treading water too much, spinning our wheels. We don't realize this because we assume this is just the way the world works and the way things are, but there's a better way. I started learning about this when I began working with Stanford professor Carol Dweck 16 years ago, and I learned about her powerful work on growth mindset and fixed mindset, and I realized how my fixed mindsets were getting in the way of my goals. I realized that I saw some of my abilities and qualities as set in stone, and that was leading me to want to prove rather than improve, and that was not serving me well. That was a powerful revelation for me and for many others. But in doing this work, I've also learned that along with developing the belief that we can change, which is a growth mindset, we also need to develop the understanding of how to change. What are the strategies, habits, and systems that any of us can use to improve and significantly expand what we can do, achieve, and experience, and the relationships we can build? How we can shift the way we work and live as individuals, teams, and organizations is what this book is about. I want to share with you five big ideas from the book. The first is that if we focus only on performing, our performance suffers. That's what I call the performance paradox, which is the title of the book and the subject of chapter one. And that's what most of us are doing almost all of the time. We're focused on performing. To understand this paradox, it helps us to step out of our everyday context and examine how the greatest performers in the world, in domains where performance can be objectively measured, come to get so good at what they do. We might think that they get so good because they spend a lot of time doing those activities, and that's what leads to improvement. But that's not the case. For example, among serious chess players, the ones who spend the most time playing games and tournaments are not the ones that achieve the highest skill and ranking. Consider how much time most of us spend typing on the computer keyboard without becoming world class. And most of us haven't gotten better in the last few years, even though we've put a lot of hours doing the activity, typing. Our research shows that the more years of experience that medical doctors have seeing patients and doing their job, on average, the lower their patient outcomes become. Of course, some of them do get better over time. Those are the ones who understand the performance paradox and understand how to overcome it. And that gets me to big idea number two, which is how to overcome the performance paradox. To do that, we have to make the learning zone a part of our work and lives. What does that mean? Think of a world-class athlete, say a professional tennis player. If she's playing a high-stakes match in a tournament and she's having trouble with a particular move, say the topspin serve, she's going to avoid that move during the match because she's doing whatever is most likely to lead her to win the game. But after the match, she'll go to her coach and she'll say, "Coach, I have to work on my topspin serve." And that's a very different activity, an area of focus and attention than what she does during the match. And it's what she does when she's focused on improvement, which is what I call the learning zone, that allows her to develop world-class skills and to be able to perform expertly during the match, which is what I call the performance zone. Chapter 2 introduces the learning zone and the performance zone. And the big revelation is that most of us are stuck in chronic performance. We're in our performance zone all the time, working hard as best as we know how, trying to minimize mistakes, and that keeps us stagnant. Now, people in sports and the performance arts, have the privilege of being able to devote large blocks of time to their learning zone, where they fully focus on improvement. But most of us are in a different situation. We have a very long to-do list with little time for it, and we might not yet be set up to devote large blocks of time to invest in improving our skills. So for most of us, the greatest opportunity is to incorporate the learning zone into our performance zone. That is to shift the way we do things so that we do them with not just a goal to get things done, but with two goals in mind, to perform and to improve, which doesn't have to take much time. It's about how we work. Chapter 3 is all about that, and it starts by pointing out that we don't learn by doing. The pioneers of experiential learning understood this and talked about a cycle. But we can learn while doing. To do that, we have to shift how we work and live. We have to regularly change or tweak the way we do things. We need to develop hypotheses, ask questions, learn from experts, gather ideas, experiment, reflect on and share mistakes, solicit feedback. And those are things that don't take much time, and they have huge returns, leading to greater results in less time. Big idea number 3 is that mistakes are not universally good or bad. We need to develop a more nuanced understanding of mistakes. And that's what chapter 5 is about. It starts by pointing out how powerful mistakes are. Now, most of us know we can learn from mistakes, but we don't realize how central and necessary they are. It turns out that from our mid-20s on, mistakes are the main way that we can elicit our own neuroplasticity, which is the changing of our brain and is how we become smarter and more capable. The way the brain changes is by making a prediction and realizing that that prediction was wrong. That's how critical mistakes are. But that's not the whole story, because the flip side is that mistakes also lower our performance. Great performances involve few or indiscernible mistakes. So what do we do? We can develop a more nuanced understanding of mistakes by unpacking 4 kinds of mistakes. The first are stretch mistakes, which are mistakes we make when we're trying something we have not yet mastered, something that's beyond what we can do. They're the mistakes we make in our learning zone, and they're what we need to be trying to elicit a lot of, not by trying to do things incorrectly, but by trying to do things that are challenging and beyond what we can do. But we want to do that at times and spaces where these mistakes are not likely to create significant damage. The second kind of mistake are the high-stakes mistakes, which are mistakes that do create significant damage. And these are mistakes we want to try to avoid. So when the consequences of a mistake would be significant, we want to shift to our performance zone and try our best to do what we know works and minimize mistakes, whether that's driving a school bus, performing a surgery, or packing a parachute. We want to do our best to minimize these mistakes. Third are the sloppy mistakes, which happen when we do things incorrectly that we already know how to do. Sometimes these sloppy mistakes are small and not important. Like if I'm home and I spill my smoothie all over my shirt, I have a choice. I can get upset or I can laugh. And I often choose to laugh, and I often share a picture with my friends and family so they can laugh too. Mistakes can add life and joy to our lives. But sometimes sloppy mistakes do create damage. So if that's the case, we do want to reflect on what we can learn from them and what we can do differently going forward to avoid that mistake. When we do this, sloppy mistakes often reveal an opportunity to foster greater focus or to make changes to our systems or tools to avoid that mistake from repeating. Like if I don't want to spill the smoothie on myself anymore, I could change where on my desk I put the glass. And finally, there's the aha moment mistake, which is when we do something as we intended, but then realize it was the wrong thing to do. Like if my spouse is upset and I ask her what's going on and try to problem solve with her, I might learn that what she needed and wanted was not for me to problem solve, but to be there with her and to empathize. We can't proactively elicit aha moment mistakes like we can stretch mistakes. But when aha moment mistakes happen, we need to treasure them because they're precious. We need to reflect on them and extract their gifts. Those are the 4 kinds of mistakes, but beware of weaponizing them. What you see as a sloppy mistake, someone else might see as a stretch mistake or as an aha moment mistake. And so we need to approach mistakes with a spirit of curiosity and collaboration, because if others feel they'll be punished if they make a mistake, they'll revert to chronic performance. That gets me to big idea number 4. Which is that being an effective learner and performer It's not just about being in a growth mindset and knowing how to grow. It's not just about each of us developing certain beliefs and habits, but it's about developing cultures and relationships where learning is valued and the everyday default. Sometimes teachers or leaders feel that students or staff just need a growth mindset. But a growth mindset and the habits for how to improve are largely influenced by the people around us. We develop and engage in these things in partnerships with others. So we must foster cultures and systems that make learning while doing the easy default, the way things are done. How to do that is what part two of the book is about, chapters 8 through 12, which involves thinking about how we build teams and interact with each other, how we lead, and what systems and habits we put in place to learn and perform. For example, the top 100 leaders at LinkedIn have a weekly meeting where a section of that meeting is devoted to inviting anyone to share something they learned the prior week. That way, they spread the lessons and they strengthen their learning culture. Or at Netflix, when people make mistakes, they're encouraged to share them. Or at Clear Choice Dental Implants, they use videos of interactions with patients when patients consent to it to examine opportunities for improvement, which can only be viewed by the person recorded, unless they choose to share it with someone else. And when they do, the video can only be used for development purposes, not for evaluation, because when people are being evaluated, they shift to their performance zone, with good reason. Part three of the book is about what to do in the performance zone and how to affect impact. Which gets me to big idea number five, which is that incorporating the learning zone into our work and lives changes not only the destination, but also the journey. That's what chapter 14, the final chapter, is about. When the learning zone is part of our everyday lives, we not only attain greater performance and achievement and impact, but in addition to that, we also experience lower anxiety and symptoms of depression along the way because we understand that hiccups, mistakes, failures are just part of the process. They're temporary and they're opportunities for learning. We understand that feedback is something anyone can benefit from and that the most competent people in the world use it all the time to get even better. The learning zone also leads us to develop deeper and more collaborative relationships with those around us, in part because of how we come to view feedback, but also because we become more curious about learning about others' experiences and situations. We ask more questions, listen better. So we give others a chance to share more of themselves so we can get to know them better, and they get to know us better. And with greater trust and understanding, not only do we have better relationships, but we also can learn and perform better. Life also becomes richer, more joyful, more fulfilling because we're exploring more, experiencing discovery and awe, which makes life more interesting and engaging. So this work is about changing not only the destination, but also the journey. Thank you for listening and for all you do, because at the end of the day, our human world is a collection of what we all do. So stay on the learning edge. I hope you enjoy the book, but even more than that, I hope you find it to be useful to pursue your goals as an individual and with those around you.
Thank you, Eduardo. That was Eduardo Briceño with five big ideas from The Performance Paradox, Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.